the guidance mechanism was interrupted by our radar or by some equipment that we have. I mean, it was quite by accident, I think. I don't know about that part of it, but even more validating for me was that one of our contract scientists for our private concern, Light City Technologies Incorporated, he worked with them. He worked with a couple of those technologies while he was with a very prominent intelligence agency of the United States government. So that was good enough for me because this...
What did you learn from that?
What I learned from that? That anything's possible. You need something, let's build it. You know? And it isn't... everything has a physical shape in this dimension or a tangibility. The ideas, everything starts out with an idea. It had to start out with an idea for these visitors to planet Earth. And maybe they had color-coded what we would call fiber optics today that could bend light and that could guide light to one data location to another data location. Well, guess what? We've been talking about it for 6 years. We have that type of technology now. The one person that I've talked to only outside of the military or the government level that would otherwise keep this out of the public view is Dr. Greer. And the reason for that is because he makes it the professional approach, which is more in line with the way we were in the military. So, yes, the lenses... what we would call the eyeball coverings, that allowed the inhabitants or the people inside the craft that made the journey across space, allowed them to see in the minimal light that we know is now present during space travel. And we know that from our own astronauts as well as astronauts of other countries. These lenses magnified light, but also brought in a certain type of clarity. And my reason for mentioning this was that it was Earth doctors and specialists and interested in what's beyond all this, beyond the physical world, that got them into the removal of these lenses. I think there's... A lot of this has been well documented by Colonel Corso. I'm sure you're familiar. Maybe you know him. you know, who was there with him? Well, there were a lot of people there with him. But a lot of the things that are said in the book or documented in the book by the Howe for Corso, I can verify it corroborated by the people that I have worked with and do work with now. So I can say that what I know about it is very true. The pathway that it took, that's another story. We talk about hidden technologies. Why don't they, or all these hidden things, and why don't they let people know about it? Well, they hide it from the public. Well, there's probably good reason for some of it. They don't, you know, maybe the government didn't understand it themselves. Being in the Air Force, maybe we didn't fully know what it was. Take those technologies from Roswell. It took a while to figure out how they worked before we knew what to make from it and then how to get it into industry. How can it benefit the people? The guidance mechanism were nothing. There was no yoke. There was no wheel. There was a console. Very colorful. And they used their hands. And by the thought process and by the way they moved their hands in rhythm with their thoughts was the guidance for the aircraft. That was one reason why if they took their attention off of what they were doing for their craft and put it on me, it might have upset the flight pattern for their craft. Now, it goes beyond just the way that they actually flew the craft, but what the meaning behind it is that they were trained to be one and use their whole being to flow with to work with the natural forces of what we call the universe. That's within the planet's sphere of influence and perhaps outside. This was very clear. And later on, after in the 80s, when we got in contact with the equipment from the Roswell incident, this is the way they discovered that perhaps the craft was being guided very much the same way. Well, that's about a 20-year spread, or less than 20. So this was just a key point.
Roswell guided system?
Yes. But we also have, where I live, my neighborhood, I find out that we have prominent research people that are working on what we called in the Foxbat, the movie Foxbat, where they had the helmet that says, oh, you think in this language and you think this and you guide it with your eyes that way and you fire it with your thought process and, you know, fire your armament from the aircraft. That's very real. It wasn't perfected to the point that the movie made it perfected, but by gosh, since that time, I think they have come pretty close. These are all available because we have data signals we worked on with our technology company. They have, in other words, the technology has caught up with the thinking process. Humanity has the quickest computer built into them than any man-made computer can ever approach, and that includes the Cray computer. Whatever we can think of, by the way, has already been done by nature. It's just up to us to figure out how nature did it that allows it to work in harmony with everything else. But the fact of the matter is, when we all come together, if we were to sit down to dinner, we would say, oh, we're from this country and that city and that city. Well, it isn't any different. If we're in planet Earth, somebody else might come from a different location, long ways away. But we all sit down and share knowledge, maybe perhaps share food. This is the way it really happens. The sensationalism that reporters and newspapers and writers put forth, it doesn't do the public any good. It feeds the desire for sensationalism in people. We naturally have a curiosity, but it can be fed with fact and truth, or it can be fed with sensationalism and half-truth, or no truth at all. How I came to learn of that NATO report, the research report about the impetus for doing the report in the first place is because during that time period, late 50s, 60s, the Cold War was beginning, and there were ships, flying craft, intruding upon the Russian space, or shall we say the communist space. And then there was flying craft intruding upon our space, and we each was blaming the other, and in doing so, we were ready to push buttons, and we came very close to pushing the buttons that would annihilate perhaps both sides, especially in the war zone, or in that close proximity zone. And before the buttons were pushed, there was a secondary type of control where we call it human reason. It's something that machines can't do. And we thought, wait a minute, we can think very quickly. This is what I mean about computers, the humans having the quickest minds in computers, faster than the Cray. They assessed the situation and said, wait a minute, it's happening to both sides. Something is unusual here. Maybe we should do some research and then do a report, because we still have the weapons, we can still push the buttons, and thus the report. That was the reason for the report. It was because of the unidentified craft encroaching on one another's airspace. It turned out it was both same unidentified craft. And so it led to some very interesting information about civilization, how it occurred here on planet Earth. That these races have been present for a long time, and perhaps they're referred to as some of the wise ones that we know about that helped educate and help train people here. How I learned of the report was through the study of a particular... I was having been employed working for the CIA and being trained as an observer. There was a... When you observe something and you follow the pathway, you follow it back to its source. And then you go back further for the reason. Then you get to the crux of the matter why something may have happened. But then we ascertain why it happened. And I was studying some information, following the pathway on some information that had to do with NASA, that had to do with extraterrestrial visitation and how real was it. Didn't matter about the sensationalism of it. That's how I came to know of the NATO report. But it was also through the military channels. I had to make some phone calls, and I did. And it was very nice to knock the dust off of those, because we can all say, wow, see where it's progressed since then, if we were willing to talk about it. Well, we worked with the Central Intelligence Agency as contractors. That was during the time of the Skunk Works. During the military, I had been in a few different places around the world, particularly with combat support in the Vietnam War. That the actual work, the close activity, was pre-military. It was when with the Skunk Works. You see, the CIA was one of our best customers. And it's the CIA that has one of the world's best air forces. It's not... We have Francis Gary Powers. Yeah, we knew him. Schumacher. A lot of these people. They're very real people. And they were often moved around by politics. And I think that we can learn something from all of this. We don't necessarily have to be... open, but we don't have to lie about it. We just perhaps don't say something. We've got to keep each other honest, and we've been doing that for years. Okay. The technologies that I know about that were removed from the craft, and I think my understanding is that they were removed from the craft at Roswell in a manner that was not known to the guards or the, I call them, wild security people that surrounding the area. Had to be done rather quietly by specialists. And I'd like to add too that I feel that I'm not positive, but I think some of this technology came from crafts of other crashes. Okay, not just... There's a lot made of Roswell, and they're not even sure where the things, you know, went into the earth near Roswell. But it's near Roswell, I know that. And I wouldn't say where the other areas are, but it happened to be in the area of New Mexico. I do know that there was, let me say this, that as far as the validation of these, what we call these little beings, the engineer that did some work for the military was asked if he'd like to do a special project, and it was in New Mexico, and it was to build a trainer, if you will, flight trainer, and he built the flight trainer. He's a mechanical engineer, electrical engineer, and through the process of building, he discovered that he was to work with some other people. After it got to a certain point, the other people came out, and they were these little guys. Not much, kind of startling, because they're all, you know, short people, but very, very intelligent, like very intelligent children, super intelligent children. And pretty soon they became like us sitting here. And what they were building was a trainer for us to learn how to fly their craft. It's a very interesting approach. So back to your question, the technology, it comes about in many different ways. We refer to the crashes, the way Colonel Corso documented those, and General Trudeau documented those, and the input from our own associate group during the 90s. There is it's the uses. I think more it's the uses where we can, from one particular technology that supposedly came from one of the retrievals. Let's call them retrievals, retrieved technologies. The computer chip, I think, is one of the best examples. The computer chip started out with computers. But then it became used in, you know, video cameras. Then it became used as microcontrollers in automobiles, aircraft.
Discovered and back engineered or reverse engineered off of the extraterrestrial vehicles?
I think they had to. They had to figure out what they were for. You know, they say, hey, well, it's first of all, it's silicone. And first of all, it is, or secondarily, it's something that looks like it exists on other, in other realms outside the planet Earth, perhaps. And also fiber optics. Fiber optics went into these computer chips. And mind you, the signal didn't travel on hard wire as we know it previously. It traveled through a hollow core and in the form of light, colored light. And each color had a spectrum and an assignment to do a certain thing. Color, light, sound, form. So we have fiber optics that we put to use. We say, hey, what is this spaghetti that is in these craft attached to these computer chips, these silicone chips, and these what looks to be electronic equipment? And what is this metal that these craft are made of, or what appears to be metal? They did a lot of research. They did reverse engineer. They had to do some testing, yes. That's something that science does, and make it repeatable. Had the desire. We get these things, a handheld scanner, so that we can scan the body and determine it, what its condition, health, and also treat from the same scanner. Are these things real? Well, I can tell you personally that we've been working on them, and we have them cure cancer. Yes, diagnose and cure. Again, politics, and God bless them, the FDA and other people whose financial interests could be damaged by the release of certain technologies. And this is not a weird statement or not a slam. Obviously, can it be a win-win-win situation for everybody? This is the way our technology development group views the use of technologies.
Have you been associated with that group? Or?
I founded the organization that became when it became a corporation in California. Yeah, I was associated with it 6-7 years before, so that would be back in the 80s. On contract, we were contractors to the CIA. That was 6 years working for the Skunk Works. That was then, during that time period. Working for the Skunk Works was 5 years. And the military, I was in for a standard 4. South, yes, there was confirmation. In 1997, I met some of our, what we called our expert recon people in the military. Highly trained and we could blow up cities and terminate great thousands number of people. They did an exercise. This is a confirmation. They did an exercise. They were hired by security in the United States is constantly tested. That's the only way you're going to find out if it's bulletproof or where you need to improve. they were hired, this group. They do asset recovery now for people throughout the world. They were asked to breach the security at Area 51. And they did a wonderful job. And they did it. And this is the one way I thought, how would I do it? Well, by gosh, this is the way they'd do it. And they went through and they disassembled piece by piece. And, you know, they could take out the pieces piece by piece and it would send a signal and alert and they could hide. And these guys were experts. They were expert recon people from the military. And they still practice some of their techniques just because you can stay in shape.
What did they find?
What did they find was that there were many areas at Area 51, and security is as crazy as ever there. You know, that says something for the security forces. And they're a little bit nutty because I think they're too far out away from humanity most of the time. And that's a personal opinion. It's not a reflection on the management. The idea that there is craft being worked on is not just an idea. Yes, there was craft there. I've talked to others that have worked on it. There's different levels there. What you see on the surface is not representative of all of the research areas that are there. But where they're actually located, if I were to, you ask me, can you take me there? No, I couldn't do that. I could take you where the hangars are and where the airfields are, the landing. I know there were two prominent people that, to this day, I still know, that founded what we call Area 51. They're two friends. I had no idea. It wasn't until 1995 and 96 that we were talking about all this, swapping stories, if you will, that they told me that they looked at me and said, do you know who it was who actually went out there for Kelly Johnson? And they named the names. I'd like to keep those quiet for now because they're still related to, it could be for the benefit of their families. Yeah. Well, they're retired, but they're still involved in just by contract.
What corporations?
DuPont. DuPont. Oh, God. IBM. What is now, I think, Western Digital. Oh, yeah, E&G. Well, I had business dealings with EG&G. They make products for us. They have made products for our corporation, our private sector corporation. They're a contractor. Quite good. They were responsible for the safe delivery and return of personnel to various work locations. But that isn't it. That's just a small amount of their work. He says, they're here. Oh, right over there. And look at the size of those ships. And it's obvious they don't like us being here. And what he went on to describe was like a lineup of military planes, only here's these craft and their people observing him, and he's observing them, Neil Armstrong. And he said, they don't want us to be here.
You have an audio tape of that?
No, I have the written communication.
The written communication.
What was it, another country from Earth? I doubt it. Not that amount of ship. To my thinking... He said, look at all those ships. I mean, I'm thinking there's 12, 10, 12. It's like a station, a staging area.
What else is
there? Were three caves.
And this is where in Utah?
And somewhere in the Wasatch Mountains. I was trying to line up to take a device, you know, this recording device like this, and do research. They did. They eventually did. This the guardians of the caves and the territory have been in the hands of the Native American in that area for hundreds and hundreds and maybe thousands of years. They are taught, they are visited quite often, as they said. These people are not, you know, fringe, what I call fringe thinking. They're very solid. They believe in the Great Spirit. A very solid practice of treating one another here correctly, how you'd want to be treated. the caretakers, as they're called, are visited by these extraterrestrials. But there's some big graves up there with people 7 feet and over. Blonde-haired, red-haired, light-skinned. Fairly well-preserved. I mean, you know, where do they come from? I don't mean there's just one out of many.
Have you seen these? Or did you
go? I've seen pictures of them. Yeah, I saw it. They brought back still pictures. Not only did they do video, they brought back still pictures. So how they opened up these caves, they look just like mountains. Who knows? I don't know, but they got in there. Yeah, there's technology, weapons or things that can heal. There's spacecraft, so I'm told. But this travel stone came out of one of where ancient records are kept. And yeah, it's ancient language. It's a root race language. It's whatever came before the Sanskrit. Senator Orrin Hatch. I think maybe Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah. You know, he came pretty close.
Where did he say that?
There's a lot going on in Utah. A lot going on everywhere. It's where I don't know all of the things. I really don't care. But that's where some of our associate scientists are. I know what some of the things are working on.
What areas, what facilities are you finding?
Well, either their own private laboratories. Some of the state universities. We do that. This guy, I guess he was the chief master sergeant, the sergeant of sergeants or something. You know, the who's who of stripes. He came into the office one day and he said, I was on the commander's staff. And when becoming an officer, I'm still on the commander's staff. Comes in, he looks at me, and I really liked the guy because he had the depth of his spirit, you know, besides being a good military man. And I said, he looked at me, he says, "You work for Kelly." And I knew where the records were. Because we don't exist, and we never worked there, and the project never existed. And this conversation never happened tonight. That kind of thing. But when he says, "You worked for Kelly," that was a way of saying, "We've looked at your records. Do you want to complete your degree?" Yes. Barry Goldwater was my sponsor. He was a commander's close buddy. But we knew him as General Goldwater. I'm very proud of that. And I served it well.
Do you know if Kelly Johnson knew of the UFO and ET issue at all?
Oh, yeah. I would say he did. But he was focused on developing a job. There were 5 people in the world of his caliber. And there were 3 of them, 3 of that caliber in the United States. One was Kelly Johnson. The other one was Jack Northrop, who lived in my neighborhood. Kelly Johnson lived in our neighborhood. I mean, he lived across the Verdugo Valley. He overlooked the... he looked like a chipmunk to me, the greatest chipmunk in the world. They call him the chipmunk. In fact, the skunk, that's where the skunk, you know, sort of like a chipmunk, that was our symbol. So all of these things are tied together in some way, linked, but not necessarily everybody knowing each other, but were they all headed in the same direction? You know, we assume they were, but the right hand and the left hand and our levels of engineering, yeah, we knew what we were working on and what the probabilities were springing from it and future development, but where they ultimately were led, where it led and what would spring from that, how it was used. I learned one thing from an associate scientist, development scientist, somebody whom I have the highest respect, who was with the CIA. He says, the first thing we want to determine is who's turning the wheels on any project. He says, that's when we decide. This is what I did when I was with the CIA, he said. This is what I analyzed before I said yes on taking on a project. you see. Who's turning the wheels? What's the motivation? Why is it being done? I asked, after we first talked, I analyzed, why is Dr. Stephen Greer doing this? I've done my research, some of it, or maybe a lot of it, and I've watched the happening, and you've been very dedicated to what you're doing, and professional. And that's why I'm here tonight. That's why I'm speaking with you. And we still have those contacts around the world that can verify a lot of things.
Do you know of anyone else that you all?
We all have our agreements that we signed, and they're still, you know, to be honored. However, there isn't any reason why certain information can't be shared when it's for the benefit of humanity.
Fossil fuels.
Well. Dr. Greer, one of the premises for founding this technology corporation that I did in 1998 was to bring forth these technologies that can help get rid of the toxics, that can clean the air, that help get rid of the need for so much fossil fuel, or help it become more efficient, that can help humanity in the form of education. That makes it helps clean up pollution. I already said that in various forms. Yes, it is time. And I can tell you personally that it's already started. And I can prove what we have come up with. We can prove.
Are these energy generation systems? Or can you speak about them?
The energy generation systems that the associates have brought forth deal with using natural energies from planet Earth. And there is a natural harmonics of the planet. It's already been proven. One of our own Air Force research members, I think out of Wright-Patterson, or Dayton, Ohio, pardon me, mapped the energy system of the planet Earth. Started out as... They've also discovered that there are craft underneath that sand. Flying craft. I've never seen them. I don't know. NASA itself got involved in spending $10 million of our taxpayer money to go in and get a certain thing that's written about in quality and history. Go back, bring it out, and try to duplicate it. Okay? This I know to be true.
What year was that?
89 to 92, I think. I'd have to verify the years. So anyway,